we're not allowed to have bad shows, in my opinion. On the production side, at least, you know? Our job is not to, we should be nailed on. Everything should be perfect. Because we're not performing, we are just reproducing.
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode. Everyone, welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Today's discussion on lighting, direction, and operation is crucial for anyone looking to understand the behind-the-scenes magic that brings live music experiences to life. It's not just for lighting professionals, but also for artists, musicians, technicians, creatives, and anyone interested in the technical aspects of live show production. Joining us to share his experience is Quincy Stanton, a renowned lighting director and operator who has worked with well-known acts such as Charlie XCX, 50 Cent, Vance Joy, King Princess, and many others. Quincy has been an integral part of creating the visual experience for some of the most memorable tours and performances of the last decade. We're thrilled to have him here to discuss his journey, the intricacies of his role in the evolving landscape of the live music industry. Hey Q, how are you?
Hey Matt. First of all, what a fantastic intro. My ego has never been so renowned designer. Give me more of this.
Oh, please. It's really a joy to have you on. For context, I'm a Q on the Charlie XCX Crash Tour in 2022 when we did first we did Europe, and then we did a little bit of North America when Elliot was opening for Charlie XCX, and Q was a shining light through the process, so I'm stoked to have him on. This is the 77th episode of the Cloud Machine Podcast, and it's about time.
Yeah. Honestly, that last show we did in DC with you guys, with Elio, still sticks in my head. That was such a fun night.
Yeah, really. It was such a great night at the Anthem, if I remember correctly, and just that venue is so iconic. You've also been a part of that XCX team through this process and through the Brad process, and I'm excited to talk a little bit about that.
Let's get into it.
But first of all, I wanted to ask you about your favorite live show experience as a fan ever.
Okay. There's this French kind of hip hop, kind of dance music artist called Stromae.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The Sandra Bell performance he did in 2018.
Yeah.
It's still like the most beautiful show I've ever seen. It's so detailed. It's so delicate. And I don't know. It's the kind of show you can create when budget doesn't really exist and they can just go really creative. It's so impressive. There's a live video online that I watch so regularly. I love it. It's incredible.
Is it something that you reference at all?
I'd love to, but it's also all the ideas I feel are so distinct.
Yeah.
If you even get too close to it, I would see it immediately and be like, oh yeah, I remember when they did that.
Right.
Like, yeah. You kind of take the inspiration and kind of have to step away from it a little bit because, you know, don't want to be guiding somebody too hard.
Yeah. Is that something that's very, like apparent in the way you work in regards to like taking in shows and then not necessarily trying to copy them, but trying to pull influence without necessarily like.
Yeah. We've done enough shows now, like in the world, everyone has, but there aren't a lot of new ideas really left.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, every few years, someone comes up with a thing that really like blows everyone's mind.
Yeah.
But like that was the idea for that year. And then we don't have any more as a people.
Yeah.
But it's lights on trust generally.
Yeah.
We have our limitations.
Yeah. Is there anything that sticks out for you from that Stromae performance at the Bell Center that you think about automatically?
The way they do Formidable, there's this giant spider on the wall, and the way the artist interacts with the video content in this way that doesn't look 2D it's so impressive. I don't know. And it's so well rehearsed, and everybody very much knows their place. I don't know. It's more of a play than it is a concert, it felt like. But
yes,
I don't know. The showmanship is so unforgettable.
Fantastic.
I want to go watch it again.
Yeah. And like you said as well, for the listeners, it's online. It's on YouTube. So go check it out.
Beautiful.
for those of the listeners that don't know your work, is there one project that would sort of represent your work? You know, that maybe comes to mind, maybe a highlight of yours.
Let's say even like last summer, getting to do 6 months with 50 Cent.
Yeah.
Was really incredible, I gotta say. Just for the opportunity and the kind of scope of that project, I'd never done something quite that involved before.
Okay. In regards to your role?
Yeah. Ended up having to maybe put on a hat more than I wanted to sometimes. And, sure. You know, really, I don't know, the length of the show and the number of the shows we did. I mean, I did a little over 100 shows, yeah. And they're still going with that show right now. I don't know. The workload was very intense, but very proud to have like gotten to the end of it in a way.
Yeah.
At least done that much of it. It's intense. I don't think I'll do it again, but to say I'm happy to have done it.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is that hat that you sort of wore extra for that tour?
So early on in the tour, the production kind of came around to the idea that we needed a show caller.
Oh yeah.
Someone kind of to be in charge of all the beats of the show, because there's so much going on and a raft of dancers and pyro and there's a magic tricks and all these things that really need to be, someone needs to be the voice of reason and kind of saying what's happening in the show.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is like fine if the show operation feels really tacked down, but we were like brand new in the tour. So you're just on the whole show is just full stimulation.
Yeah.
Trying to think about everything all the time. And then you look up and the lights are crazy. And you're like, oh, I forgot I have to do all the things at once. And it's, I don't know. I really started to enjoy it right about when I stopped doing it. So
right.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. And so you're saying that you were basically calling the show like with a mic, basically from front of house.
Yeah. Headset on everyone. I was in everybody's ears.
Yeah. All the time. Very fantastic.
Yeah. No, like self-talk aloud, because everybody will hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't be rapping in the mic kind of thing. Singing along.
Sort of song back at him.
Yeah. That's awesome. On the podcast, we do a quote segment. Last year was the Erykah Badu quote, comparing music as an art form to music as a business, and comparing them, getting our guests different perspective on it and stuff like that. This year, we're talking about a Joni Mitchell interview. Sorry, a Joni Mitchell quote from an interview from 2004. Now, this is 20 years ago. She says, "I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." Now, again, just to point out that she didn't say this, but she says that a music business executive says that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. I just want to get your first instincts on that when you hear that sentence.
You know, when I read the quote, I hadn't really processed that it was 2004.
Yes.
And that really shifts my perspective on it really hard. Because even to think, it's nice to think that far back, they were still thinking about the fact that, like, you can kind of manufacture an artist pretty simply as long as they fit the right visual range of the audience is looking for.
Yeah.
We can build pop stars.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's less true, maybe very current day.
Yeah.
Than it was back then. Mm-hmm. Just because of the breadth of kind of exposure that exists online now, you get a lot of like actual talent. What is actual talent? But whatever. but yeah, I don't know. Wow, I'm thinking about it in a whole new way now.
Well, yeah, I guess. My question is like, how do you view this? How do you view, you know, even in your roles, maybe some people that you recommend for jobs, like, are you looking with, you know, at how they are in a team, you know, their willingness to like sort of, I don't want to say mold to a team, but enter a team correctly? Or are you looking for talent? Like, even from the tech side of things, if we were going to look at this.
So like pretty much anything is teachable. I've always said that.
Yes.
You know, it would be great for you to have the knowledge already, but realistically, you can learn absolutely anything if you put the time towards it.
Yeah.
So the talent is kind of like negotiable.
Yes.
Preferred, but negotiable. But it's really people, I don't know, that aren't terrible to work with. I don't really care how good you are at what you do if I don't want to be around you.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know. It's been, I've been lucky in my career, I guess, to genuinely only work with people I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
But you know, it's, every once in a while you run into a team, you're like, yeah, I forgot I was lucky. I forgot the people I work with are kind of just like nice to be around.
Right.
And then like, yeah, I don't know. I would never recommend somebody that I wouldn't want to spend a few hours with for any gig. Yeah. It's about the people first.
Yes. And you just said you just did 100 dates last year with 50%. Yeah. Like if that person right beside you, the whole show was, you know, shitty. And it's not, honestly, and it's not even about the show sometimes. It's about the rest of the time. Most of the time. It's about the tour.
The show is the easy part, really.
Yes. Yeah. It's about the rest of it's the challenge. It's about the off days. It's about all that stuff.
Yeah. And right beside me, all the 50 tour was Ben Thurston.
There you go.
Same guy who was with me for all the Charlie dates, that first run.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Really my rock the whole time. We just, you know, when we're mad about stuff, we talk to each other and not go yell into the world because I know I can trust him. And I don't know. It's nice to always have someone who had your back on a crew that big.
Yeah.
To know that me and Ben were just going to take care of each other all the time. It's great.
Totally.
Even on the work side.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's important to have your friends on the road. And it, honestly, lucky sometimes to have your friends on the road as well. Where do you think the industry is going? Very general question.
Yeah. Broad. I don't know. I love the new pop resurgence.
Yeah.
I think it's very cool. It's nice to be a part of it, but even without, it's nice to see such a large amount of like very talented, very cool pop acts out right now. Which was never my genre, but man, I can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of like internet talent that it's strange because now you see so many artists that I feel like I see a lot more people that I feel like should have more recognition than they do. You know, and I'd love to, I don't know. You see the random YouTube star getting tours and things nowadays. Like, I don't know. Maybe the preciousness of touring is kind of gone.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I completely agree. It feels like once you get the numbers, you can almost start touring like automatically. Or the agent starts being like, hey, we got to hit the road and stuff like this. And
yeah,
that's where you really, from my perspective, that's where you really see the difference between an established act or, you know, somebody that's just coming up and has the numbers on TikTok, really.
Realistic. There's a lot of easy mistakes to make and, you know, you have to make them, unfortunately, to get through it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's fascinating sometimes.
Yeah.
But
you mentioned the development of the industry and pop and how it's coming back. And, you know, we mentioned Charli XCX, and obviously she's been sort of at the forefront this summer. You know, Brat summer is really a thing. Like, like, it's even weird. Like, it's not weird, but like, I really thought that she blew up with Crash.
Yeah.
But like this like campaign has been like insane.
It's
like,
wild, right?
Yeah. It's crazy. And I'm sure like internally, I haven't spoken with the team a lot this year, but we're just about to get into it. But just like, I'm sure it's been just such a mind-blowing experience. I wanted to talk to you briefly, just for now, about like the impact of Brat and how you've been seeing it from the live side, because obviously you're very involved on the live side of things.
Yeah. Well, you know, just for the show, for the whole, really a lot of the brand of Charlie, full props to Imogen Strauss.
Yes.
She is a monster. She's like, I don't know. Her vision is nuts and has been really great to work beside. You know, sometimes you butt heads, but it sucks because you butt heads with her and then she's right all the time. All right. Never mind. I'm just going to stop fighting with you.
Yeah.
And then the live shows this time around. So yeah, exactly what you said. The Crash tour felt huge. It felt like wild. There were so many people at every sale and everybody knew every word.
Yeah.
But these, like, we did 6 or 8 of the headline shows.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen an audience reaction this aggressive, this like full send day after the album came out. It's like everybody knew everything. The New York show was like, I don't know. I've been doing this a minute. You don't really step back very often and go like, wow, this is something else. But spent most of the show ears out, just like taking in the audience, because the Charlie fans are incredible.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Can I ask about, like, let's say her previous show and let's say this one in regards to like lights and mm-hmm. Just production overall, because it feels like from the outside that it's very much like a club dynamic for this show, for this album, for this thing. How has that changed, like even just like the atmosphere of the show? And you know, you're saying like you're taking your ears off and being like, holy shit, it really is just a club in here.
Yeah, it's so the Crash Tour was very almost theater, you know?
Yeah,
everything was very precise, and we were trying to, the movements were all very choreographed. It was all, but the show, you know, that show was still incredible.
Yeah,
it's, I don't think choreography took anything away from it. If anything, I don't know. It showed the way Charlie's brain can do seven things at once on stage sometimes. And
yes. Yeah.
She's fascinating. Yeah. But this show is much darker, almost like uncomfortably dark for me sometimes. But again, she's just right. And Johnny, let's not forget Kingsbury. He's very good at what he does. But it's, I don't know. It is full club. It's full energy the whole time. If you don't like strobes, maybe the show is not for you. But kind of the Charlie show never has been. But it's, I don't know. Yeah, it's a full new energy to the show.
Yeah.
And I was curious how well the fans were going to take it, honestly, going from this full, very well lit choreographed pop show to like a really dark, kind of heavy dance album. No problem. I don't know. She can do anything.
Yeah, she can do anything. So I was just about to ask you, dark, not necessarily in themes, but actually dark in regards to like actual lighting in the stage.
Yeah. And it's, you know, all white with a colored accent on occasion that really makes the colors stand out and feel like they kind of shake you out of the show a little bit. But it's, other than that, the show will punch you in the face over and over and over again. But it's very cool. Point. Yeah, and then there's a very delicate moments in the middle of it for some of the heavier slow songs.
Yeah.
That still feel very, I don't know, it's still kind of dark and mysterious, but you still get to connect with Charlie in this very interesting way.
Totally. Yeah. And I want to ask you as well, maybe I want to be also sensitive to like NDA stuff, and you know, not go too into it, but in regards to, so Imogen Strauss, for those who don't know, Charlie's creative director. You said that you were like butting heads on some things. Are there some examples that you could give? And is it mostly in regards to creative, or is it also like from the technical aspect of it?
Yeah. So for this show, at least for the stage show, the creative was the technical, was the lighting show, because there wasn't really a whole lot else on stage.
Right.
And we butt heads in that Imogen wants what she wants.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we're trying to find a way that's a little less taxing or less challenging to get to. But at the end of the day, you know, you end up finding a compromise or giving her what she wants. And then, no, look at that. It was the right thing. We should have had anyway.
Right.
Like, the butting heads are just because, you know, egos and things.
Totally.
From all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but, I get that. And I was just thinking about something before we go on to the next thing. You mentioned that the stage for the Brat Tour, as we've seen it so far.
Anyway, yes.
It has been very like bare, so to speak. Mm-hmm. No, not a lot of props, no stage design. It's all lighting and her, basically. As you've said, how easy or how hard has it been to go from venue to venue with that show? Has it been complex or is it sort of straightforward because it's there?
Okay. So the show is, we're lucky to work with, you know, a couple of very talented programmers.
Yes.
I think you've met Kai Colucci, this brilliant guy who works with Johnny a lot. You might not have met him while we were out. Yeah. He might've already been gone by the time we saw you guys. But he is very good at building a show that is not necessarily easy, but like easy as it could be to put into every venue.
Yeah.
And the way the show was used this time around, it's generally white. It's, I mean, there's a few positions, but it's not really getting that wild.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy to put show to show to show.
Right.
Because the show was more, I'm not going to say simplistic, but it was exact in a different way that was easier to achieve.
Yeah. Fantastic. From outside of the Charlie perspective, are you seeing some new developments in the industry that you're interested in personally? You know, from either from a creative aspect or a technical aspect, are there some things that you're seeing that is like, oh my god, that's cool? You know.
Okay. Yeah. Let's say I've gotten to see a lot of my more favorite artists this year.
Yeah.
A couple of times. And I gotta say the EDM design has gotten very interesting. Seeing Justice this year.
Oh yeah.
Really like formed a lot of my like new thoughts on how to use lighting as an element and less of a static thing.
Right.
And then the Chemical Brothers show this year also blows me away. They are, I don't know, for me, doing things that I think are so innovative and work in a way that I haven't seen every day forever at every show I've been to, you know?
Right.
I don't know if that even answered the question. Industry developments though. New things? I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
We found a certain point with lights where they're a little too bright, even, you know, so we're moving backwards a little bit. We found a point where we found a brightness that's enough.
Right.
Which kind of capped out technologically, at least in the fixture side, I feel, for a little bit.
Right.
I don't know.
More,
I suppose
you're talking more on the, like on the trend side. Like that's sort of what you're seeing is that like shows are getting less bright.
Well, no, like we found there are fixtures that exist in the world that are a little too bright to be used in certain ways. They kind of blow out the rest of the stage. It's going to be kind of one of these and nothing else.
Right.
And I run to them a few times this year, and it's been nice to be at a point where we're not reaching for any more in the industry. Like we found, this is plenty.
Right,
we found enough light. It's compact. It looks great. We can start backing down, get a little more delicate about how we do things, you know, because there's a huge difference in 80% and 100%.
Yes.
You know,
for sure.
The feeling of the show. Yeah.
Great. I want to get into your introduction. We've been talking for a while, but your back, a little bit of your background. Can you start telling us a little bit about you know your background and how you got into the lighting direction operation?
Yeah. I kind of stumbled my way into the industry, really.
Yeah.
Ended up doing it on accident. I needed a job when I was going through university, and the only job available on campus was in the theater in their tech department backstage.
Yeah.
With this lovely guy named Luke who ran the theater. And, you know, I have a need to be at the top of most things I do. So 2 years later, I'm running the theater and having, you know, doing all the jobs. We're running audio and lighting and video and prepping the stage. And, you know, this recital today, there's a play coming in. Yeah. It was really fun and really felt really interesting. And then pretty much the day I graduated, a production company came up, was like, you want to come do this now? So there I had a music degree and have never used it. Went directly into lighting.
I was going to ask, what'd you go to school for and where?
Fort Hays State University in Kansas for trumpet performance.
Crazy.
Yeah. Okay. You never would have guessed.
No, I would have never guessed.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fantastic. Yeah. And did you ever sort of use those teachings in what you did at that theater?
See, not really. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not musically, at least. I never got to use my instrument skills, but like being very well versed in rhythm and polyrhythm and kind of dynamics and the shape of things and even just song structure is very helpful in this business. It's interesting to see people who don't have a musical background.
Yes.
Doing this kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, no, you really think of it in a different way than I do. Or it's like, this is the chorus again. Let's just do what we did before. Yeah.
No, that's great. Even like from from a busking perspective, like when it's time
coded,
like for sure, when you're maybe more starting out. Just a general question. Do you find yourself busking a lot of shows?
For the 50 tour, the encore changed every night. So we had to busk it fully. But that was great. It's so refreshing to get to do it again. I found my way into this little time code world, and now it supplies all of my gigs. So it's very much not, I don't get to busk anymore, but I really love it when I get to, honestly. It's so fun.
I was going to describe what busking is, but you're the pro.
Oh, go ahead. Please.
Okay, I'll describe it and then maybe you can add on to it. But basically, yeah. Busking, for those who don't know, is manually changing or operating lights for a performance. While typically in bigger touring shows, not even in bigger touring shows, but a lot of touring shows, there's what we call, it's like a time-coded show. So all the music and the lights are designed in pre-production to basically a certain time. So from a playback perspective, which is what we do at Eights,
yes.
or one of the services at Eights, we basically press play on a song. It starts from 000 for example. And then let's say chorus two would be at 2:30. And from a music perspective, it would be at that exact millisecond. And from a lighting perspective, it would also be at that exact millisecond. So it allows for people to design shows beforehand so it looks better day of show.
Yeah. Let's not even say better. We have a more like guaranteed, repeatable output.
Yes.
As a
yes.
show.
Yes.
That can be, you know, the amount of different you get in comfort as an artist on stage to know that X, Y is going to happen exactly at the right time. At the end of the song, we'll definitely get a blackout.
Yes.
It's going to be blue and this, and that side of the stage is going to be dark. So I can say over here, like, it's, I don't know. It takes a lot of stress out of everyone's head.
Yes.
Sometimes for the bigger shows, because otherwise it gets a little, who knows what happens when.
Yeah.
And we're not a jam band. We're not like doing those sort of things. We know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
we rehearse it so we can have the best possible product every single night.
Yeah.
That shit. But.
You mentioned something that we've been really sort of talking about at Eights recently, which is like the confidence of the artist and like how important for the people on stage, but also off stage to be confident in the production. Can you speak to that a little bit, how important it is for you, even on your team side of things or your process of how important it is for individuals to be confident in their team and the production that they're doing?
Absolutely. Let's use the Charlie crew because we know most of them. I know all like,
yeah.
And we work very well together. As I say, I know at any point that if anything goes wrong on stage, the stage manager is going to show up in moments. He is there. I know he's there and I know his eyes are tuned and I know he's looking for everything all the time. I'm never going to be concerned if Charlie's off stage for longer than I think she's supposed to be, that someone isn't already on it.
Right.
So like there's just so much to know. And then for Charlie's side, like she knows exactly where everything's going to be, where everyone is going to be. If she needs anything, she can look upstage left and Paige is there.
Yep.
Looking right at it. Like it's always there's to know that you're taken care of at all times. For everybody, that everybody is looking out for everybody and is trying to make the best show we could possibly make.
Yes.
It takes so much stress out of your head, so much less to think about. I don't need to worry about the stage necessarily. Yeah. Like anything that happened on the stage. My job exists in this box and it's these lights, and that's the only things I really need to really focus on.
Yeah.
Because I have confidence in everybody else that everybody's got their eyes on.
Hmm. And how can a production make their artists and the people on the team more confident in what they do? Is it all preparation or is it more than that?
I think it is a lot of prep and there's a lot of, I don't know, knowing how people react to things.
Yes, knowing people, you
know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, if you don't know, you can say things that can kind of light people up or, you know, make them uncomfortable in a way you didn't, like, I don't want you to freak out about it, but, like, the mic stands fall on stage left. I don't want to see you come sprinting out and pick up the mic, like, will handle it in a way that's nice and reasonable.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And knowing your team is very important. And getting along with your team is very important.
Yeah.
We spend way too much time together every day, every morning. I'm going to see you again and we're going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, tempers are going to flare. People are going to yell at each other. But knowing, even just being confident that I know that Rafa has my back, even when we're not getting along today, but I know his goal is still the product that we're trying to put out there.
Fantastic. I want to go back a little bit to Kansas here for a second.
Yes.
Maybe a little past Kansas actually. Can I ask about your first like big, this is a little cheesy, I don't necessarily like this term because every opportunity is an opportunity, but what was your like first like big break in the industry?
Break.
Yeah, the big break is funny.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're kind of always achieving and trying to do more. So yeah. I'm still having my big breaks.
And learning.
Yeah, at all times. Let's say my first really solo tour I was out on my own was that King Princess tour.
Yeah.
Sure. Program designed by a good friend of mine, Morgan Embry. And just fully being all right, here's your console, here's your show. Get out there, figure it out.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. It was challenging. Really, really hard. And you fail a little bit, but you learn a lot more. And
yeah,
I don't know, learning how to tour, learning how to be on a bus with an artist, learning how to, manage touring the country just as yourself. You have no team with you. It's
right.
I was lighting, and that's everybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It was the first time I'd worked off of a team. First time I had to live on a bus. You remember your first bus? Was it the Charlie one?
Yes, my first bus, I think, was the Charlie one. There's been a lot of vans
and
stuff before that.
I have this weird jealousy that I've never gotten to do a van tour.
Oh my god!
And I know it, everyone's why would you be jealous? But it's not my role's not one that ever really gets pulled in. People are in.
That's true. Yeah.
That's how money works out.
There's a lot of roles to fulfill before lighting gets in there.
Yeah,
sure. Have you done purely flying tours though?
Mm-hmm.
Just flying, no bus, of course.
Yeah, it sucks. It's the worst way to tour.
I agree with you.
Because you get out of the show and then first thing in the morning back at the airport to fly to the next place to do a show that. You're just having 2 or 3 hours of sleep over and over again, and it gets taxing, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're wasting 4 hours at the airport or whatever while you
could every day.
Driven that. Yes. Mm-hmm. We understand each other.
This is nothing both. This is the boring part of the industry. Yeah. Oh, no, you had to take 15 flights last month. You don't get it.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, and just back on that King Princess stuff, how did that impact your career today? If you were to think back on it, how did that shape your career from then to now, kind of thing? That first opportunity.
I don't know. King Princess taught me a lot about just making friends, about just whatever you do at the end of the day, know that everyone's happy with each other and just smiling, and you can get so far in the business by just being friendly. Smile, shake every hand, go out, try to leave every venue with the text, kind of not that mad at you, just always
not that mad. Yeah.
That's a losing game, but it's just, I don't know, the whole industry is about making friends and about making every connection you can. And that one really opened my eyes to it. The amount of people I met that I've worked with again and again that I met on that very first tour.
Yeah.
Just because, I was a decent hang at a House of Blues in Austin 8 years ago. And I remember you. Do you want to come do this now? Yeah, sure. I'm there. Let's go do it. Everything is just making friends.
Are there some specific connections that you could talk about that, that the origin of that connection is the random hang? I always come to that point in the podcast where I'm always talking about that. I'm always talking about the hang and how important the hang is.
Because the social dynamic of touring is so strange.
Yes.
Right. You have your paid roommates and also your workmates. You're around 24/7. It's all about making those friends. Which one of these is interesting? My first Charlie show, I did because Morgan Embry, who programmed that King Princess show, she couldn't make it.
Okay.
So I went out to cover a random college show in Indiana that we played 3 songs of and then had to quit. Right. And then had a fun night hanging out with our production manager and the audio guy at that time, and just, made good enough friends that when the design company changed, they're actually, we have this guy and he was cool for that day, so let's pull him back for this next thing. And and then here we are almost 3 years later of Charlie.
Yeah.
Just, being a good guy, being a good friend, hanging out, trying to be part of the crew. Like,
yeah, it's so important.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I wanted to ask you about your day to day.
Okay.
And your just a typical day to day, as you know, a lighting director, an operator on tour. For the listeners and for myself. Okay. As well.
Yes. All right. We'll simplify it a little bit. We come in the morning. Depending on the size of the tour, there will be people that build the lighting early in the morning, and we'll come in and kind of supervise where we want to move things to shape them for each new room.
Yeah,
to kind of make it so we're ready to make the best show we can in this new size space. Mm-hmm. And then once things are kind of up and getting turned on, I will go out to my lighting console. It's just a very specialized computer that, and then to update all the things we need to change day to day to fit into this new space or with the new songs we're doing. Or there's a lot of precision needed in where things are pointing or the speed that things flash at to achieve the show that we're trying to make.
Yes.
That you have to adapt. Oh, I guess it's something to say that we're going into a room with sometimes a new overhead package every day.
Yes.
On some tours or a new, like, or we can't bring in half of our stuff. So how are we going to fit this weird small version of our show and make it look good?
Even
without the whole production with us.
Yeah. It's, for me, it's also important to highlight that lighting is the lighting team is always pretty much the first people at the venue.
First in, last out.
First and last, yes. And it is really because you're changing things day to day. It's like for the listeners, it's I don't know if this is a good analogy, but it's like it's basically like you're trying to like basically put furniture in your house, but your house changes every day.
But you still have those same couches.
Yes.
And you have to find a new way to put them into this strange room that you're in now.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you have less couches. And you know, that's just how it works out. There's no coffee table today. There's just no room. It's exactly that. And to say we're the first ones in purely out of necessity.
Yeah,
because we hang things a lot overhead and we take up a lot of the space on the stage when we build our lighting in the morning.
Yeah,
that it's kind of the only way to do it that's economical for everybody. Yeah. If we're just done and up and out of the way, then everyone else can come do their stuff underneath. So yeah, it's really just economical. If we could come in last, we would. That'd be great. Hit me with a we'll come in at 1 p.m. and throw some lights up.
Can I ask about after load in and, you know, after you've programmed all the lights, what does your day look like from, let's say, sound check to show?
Okay. So yeah. Including sound check, the artists will come out most of the time. We'll do a song or two to get them comfortable in the room and what things look like in that day, kind of walk through any important places they need to know about. And that'll be could be 15 minutes to an hour and a half if people want to run stuff and just feel good about new stuff that might be in the show. And then normally there's a big break, depending on how the day went, I guess. Sometimes there's no break when the show starts.
Hopefully there's a break.
On a good day, there might be 3 or 4 hours where there's kind of nothing to do, or you're free to do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
I love to sleep. So I might be a quick hour nap and then try to get an hour walk in whatever city we're in just to go see something that's not the inside of the venue for a few hours. We'll come back in, have dinner, and then normally we're in show mode by then.
Fantastic. What are some of the responsibilities and challenges that you face in your role from the day to day?
I don't know, it's all being flexible and learning how to make compromises inside of the show to benefit the show. You know, there's a lot of, you know, learning how to work with the people around you, knowing what you can ask audio to do, to move, do, like, hey, I need this here, but you need this here. So like, which one of us are able to flex a little bit and being able to work with the team in that way. But it's also, I don't know, I've done a lot of tours where it's a brand new overhead package every single day for months and months and months. And it's just getting the speed and comfortability inside of your programming and programming style to be able to just slam a room in an hour feels great, but it's not always that way. I might spend all day on this overhead package that's overly complicated for no reason.
Yeah.
And then doors open, so you know, got 2 hours, figure it out.
Totally.
Yeah.
You mentioned sort of the different rooms and overhead packages, which for the listener means basically different lights above the stage or things that are hung up that you can't necessarily change.
So there's on a certain level of touring, you won't be carrying a lot of that stuff because a lot of rooms have it already, and it's, you know, it's expensive. It's a lot of extra stuff, so you need to start hanging things.
Yes.
And every room kind of has whatever they have. Yeah. Which can be wildly different every day. Very, very different every day.
Yeah. But I guess my question here is, how do you prepare for a tour from a lighting operations point of view? Like, are there things that one does to prepare? We talked about a lot of the operational day-to-day stuff. Are there things that people do beforehand?
Yeah. I love to get as much information about the venues as I can before we start touring. So I will have a Google Drive that has every venue and every spec sheet and we've already looked through and found out this room's going to be challenging for this reason.
Yeah.
So we can work ahead, well ahead into the future, 3-4 months, and like thinking about how we're going to fit into some 20-foot stage or something. We're already making plans.
Yeah.
It's all about being prepped and knowing your show as well as you can before you're even doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's watching it in a visualizer that shows the lights programmed as they are, over and over again sometimes. So, because you can't be surprised by your own show. That's one of those things that can dig you a hole that you're going to create some problems in the show.
Yeah.
If you don't know what's supposed to be happening. It's all about preparation. It's all about being ready. It's all about doing the pre-work and trying to have all the information you can.
Yes.
Before you start touring.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask how like pre-production rehearsals plays a role in your confidence in the show?
I mean, that is the time we get to watch it in the most contained, absolute way. Like this is absolutely our goal. At the end of pre-production, we should have arrived at the show as it is.
Totally.
And we've spent so much time getting it just nailed in, working out all the tiny little things that need to be done before we get going. And then it's my job day to day to try to reproduce that as high of a quality as we can.
Yes.
In every space, in every new situation.
Yeah.
With whatever time we have available. Yeah.
Yeah. The touring industry is very much centered on the recreation or the reproduction of ideas that were planned beforehand, you know, and a lot of the team on tour is like their main goal is just to recreate. Right?
Yeah. I mean, almost all of us, really.
Yeah.
Even the audio guys, they are literally just reproducing a sound that's made on stage.
Yeah.
It's a lot of repetition, a lot of knowing, being confident in all your stuff and, you know, learning pretty quick what you forgot to do and how to do it right the next time. Because you can make a mistake, but you can't make a mistake twice.
Totally.
That's not allowed. Yeah.
Now, talking about, you know, the reproduction and the sort of like the balance between the creative and sort of reproduction activities during a tour, how do you collaborate with lighting designers, artists, and other crew members to ensure the lighting setup meets the vision for the show? More on the creative and the reproduction, and maybe the word here is the translation.
Yes.
For like an Imogen or Charlie to the stage.
Yeah. So a lot of our need for exactness is executed by the lighting team, whoever's doing the build. And if we can get things as close to perfect as where they're supposed to be,
right,
it takes a lot less work to kind of translate this into this next room.
Yes.
And then it's a lot of it's just experience and knowing how what things you can use to do certain other bits of the show. Or in doing things in a smart way. You learn very quickly early on what you shouldn't have done. You know, you get into the show, you get far enough. And, oh, I, this should have been, I should have been using the strobes as strobes and not wash lights. What a weird choice. Yeah. But you know, you make some bold swings
right.
It doesn't always work out. But you, yeah, it's all knowing what is possible with what you have. And then knowing how to achieve those looks every day.
Yeah, totally.
And making sure your team understands the quality that is expected of them mm-hmm. and all of us all the time.
Yes.
We're not allowed to have bad shows, in my opinion. And it, on the production side, at least, you know, our job is not to, we should be nailed on. Everything should be perfect because we're not performing. We are just reproducing.
Yes. So, yeah.
We can arrive at perfect.
Yeah. That is. Yeah. I agree with that. Can I talk to you specifically about, like, maybe again that this translation piece, because I from our perspective, from the eights perspective, it's quite important in regards to sort of translating the artist's vision. I want to ask you if you are ever in those conversations and how those are and what sort of transpires in those conversations with, let's say, a creative director and, let's say, like mm-hmm. the lighting team.
Yeah. So on on the 50 Cent tour,
yeah,
often we would, not often, on occasion we would receive things day of.
Sure.
And 50 would say, hey, today Ed Sheeran is guesting. I want to be kind of dark and like Starry Night things, and like just like I want to put this text on the box and he'll be in there, and that's kind of all you get. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll figure it out from there. We don't know exactly what's happening, but between us and all the departments, we will figure out a plan to get it to be what we think you want.
Sure.
And depending on the artist, you might not get to have another conversation about it. It could just be there, figured out, and I'll see it at the show.
Right.
And you know, it's all learning. It's all figuring out like, oh, he hated that. Yeah, he did not like that at all. Okay, cool. No, we all learned something today. And so next time you've gained the knowledge to not do that again.
Right.
Yeah, but it's all about how much they want to be involved sometimes. If they want to give a command from on high and then expect everyone to read your mind. That's a talent. Yeah. And it takes time to learn exactly what they meant by that.
Yes, and every artist has a different sort of meaning, and their palette is always different as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, and like hearing, this is a personal pet peeve, artists and talking about color is always such an interesting conversation because we think of it in such a different way, and often they think of it in a very like, but what does blue mean to you? Like where, in which of this giant range of blue over here do you want? Like, yeah, I don't know. It's different languages. We all speak different languages inside of our production caveat. Learning how to translate them to each other is mm-hmm. just more of that game.
Have you seen like some better processes than others? Like are there some things like production teams can do to ensure that it's translated maybe more efficiently?
So there's it's all about how much time you have, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If we get 72 hours, we could make a new thing, render it out, let them like physically see what's going to happen. Or if we have a couple shows in between here and there, like, let's just do it during soundcheck.
Yeah.
You can tell me yes, no, you feeling it? No, we're good. Cool. All right. You don't like it? Then we can change everything up. We have another few days before we want to put it into the show anyway.
Right.
That's the dream scenario.
Yeah.
Most often it's, hey, tomorrow we're going to try this song. And I want like green and blue and let it be dreamy. Let's see if my dreamy is your dreamy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's so funny. Oh, man. No, that is fantastic. Wondering if you've seen some involvement in it, like, so some advancements and the evolution of technology and how that sort of evolved your role of in as a lighting director and operator, and just like maybe from, let's say, from Kansas, let's say, to now.
Yes.
have there been some like major technological like advancements in your field that has sort of changed the way you work?
Yeah, even just like inside of our main bit, like the lighting control surface.
Yeah.
And when I first started, I was working on a Grandame 1. It's this old gray clicky console. It feels like a typewriter. It's terrible, but it had Space Invaders on it, and that's what made it cool. But it operated shows that were simpler and didn't need to do as much as we do now. And we're two generations into this console now.
Yep.
And it can do everything. But it means that every 10 years you have to relearn everything you learned the last time around. And it's been challenging, but like this most recent console set is the most impressive. Like, you can see so much potential in the idea of what they've put out now.
Yes.
That like things that used to take in a couple hours in my day in the morning as an operator, I'm done within 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And moving on and not thinking about that anymore. It's the way it's kind of like lightened the load is hard to express unless you were doing it on the other one before as well.
Yeah. Right.
And saw how many steps it took to go from today's show to tomorrow's show.
Yeah.
And then now I do it in the morning because it's going to take me 10 minutes and I'll be done with it.
Right. And this is the MA3, correct?
Yes, the MA3. I think it's, there you go. It's a challenging transition for all you lighting people out there. But it's kind of worth it. It's worth it most of the time.
It's important. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And you're not going to get a choice. So learn it anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there some other like emerging trends in lighting technology and operations that you're particularly excited about? Maybe some teasers for the MA4 or something?
No, we're a decade away from an MA4. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, not to worry about that yet.
Yeah.
They're still putting out software revisions every few weeks. So it's,
Sure.
Yeah. The MA is a game of never getting too stable because MA2 didn't really work either.
Okay, sure.
It worked well enough. Yeah. But let's say like even in like lighting fixtures nowadays, there's some really cool laser powered fixtures that are ultra powerful and create beams you've never seen so solid before.
Yeah.
Some cool flat audience scanning lasers. There's a lot of lasers out, I guess, that are
laser
really
tech.
Unique. Hey, lasers, I'm into it. I don't get to do lasers. Give me more. And then there's a lot of, I guess I'm an old man in lighting, but a lot of fixtures that are doing too much, kind of do too many things. I don't need a beam on the front, a strobe on the back, and it can spin endlessly. And I wasn't using that anyway.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like we're arriving at a bit of a plateau in the technology needed to run lighting shows in that way.
Yeah.
We're not pushing the envelope anymore for what's possible.
Totally.
Yeah.
In the past, like, I don't know, decade or so, I mean, longer than that, but we've seen a little bit, like, a lot more of, like the video sort of elements coming into play. How has the sort of dynamic between those two different things, how has it affected your world, and how do you sort of go about, working with video and that, and how has it, like, changed the way you work?
Yeah, it's a delicate balance sometimes in finding a way to not sit in front of each other or on top of each other. It's finding the way the show looks the best and everybody gets to have their space inside the show.
Yeah.
A lot of brightness concerns, some like color things you shift day to day to keep us all looking the same at least. And it's also just like someone else pulling the visual element in there can be really interesting. It's fun to not be in control of a bit of it.
Sure.
Because he's like, no, that's on him. I don't know. And it opens up a lot of opportunity and a lot of cool, new, interesting things to do.
Yeah.
When you have this screen that can do anything at the back. On the production side, day to day, it's interesting to have a new, not necessarily new in my lifetime, but a new department.
Yes.
In the production world.
And
you see it still, this kind of like that they're like the new kids around and they don't have some of the tricks worked out, but it feels like a lot of the other departments have already been through these struggles.
I
don't know. It's cool to see video get better, but that they're like still going through growing pains
quickly
kind of
thing.
Yeah. Because there's all this other knowledge about how most of it should be done.
Right.
But yeah, it's interesting to watch them catch up.
Yeah. Do you feel like the weight off your shoulders are relieved a little bit when there's video because it's you're not in charge of all of the visual aspects of the show?
Yeah. It's always nice not to be the only one people are looking at, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, when something goes wrong,
not my problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I have an issue, it doesn't mean necessarily that the show is full stop.
Sure.
Yep. Like we could probably get by on some heavy content from the wall for a minute.
Yeah.
And just let that be the vibe that we're doing tonight because we're having an issue and we'll figure it out within the next few minutes and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's nice to have someone else visual in front of the house. We get a friend. Audio always has their friend that sticks around all day and does their thing, you know? It's nice to have someone else in your department. Yeah. Listen, I'm not trying to start a fight, but yeah.
So, yeah, fantastic. I wanted to talk to you about something that you mentioned just right before we press record in regards to you knowing a lot and sort of emphasizing crew dynamics and being a team member and being a leader within a team and how important it's been for you in your career. You know, we talked about a little bit of the importance of the hang, but I just wanted to open up the conversation to that and how like you see yourself, I mean, and I can say that it is true as being like a good sort of representation of what like a team member should be kind of thing.
I appreciate the compliment. Let's start there. I like that a lot. Again, ego constantly inflating.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Every day is about making these. At the end of the day, these are the people you have to live with, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And these people you have to work with. You didn't get to say in this. This is just the team that's put around you. Mm-hmm. So make the absolute best of that all the time. Like, if they annoy you, figure out why, and then like have a conversation about it, and just like now we put that away. Now we can just like do our jobs and have a good hang.
Yeah.
And a lot about establishing your boundaries, you know, and like knowing how much is too much for you on the people side, because it can get exhausting sometimes. Because again, you work with these people every day, and knowing like maybe we shouldn't hang out tonight because I've seen you every day for 3 weeks, and it'll be good for us to take a moment to just not be around each other.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know, managing people's expectations, a lot of bus etiquette is so important, and things like it's, if you don't live on a bus, you'll never understand, but it's unique. It's very challenging.
Yes. Yeah. What are some of the things that stand out in bus etiquette for you?
one of my very good friends, Paige Haynes, can't stand the smell of feet. It sticks in my head now. Every time I get on a bus, like, my feet smell? Maybe they do. I'm going to go wash my feet and then I'll get on the bus. It's like, it's stuck in my head forever. But then there's like the boring regular things with the ways to use the bathroom on the bus.
Yes. Yeah.
Not being loud around the bunk alley. Those like simple little things that seem really simple until you get on the bus that no one is respecting those kind of rules. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
But generally, I don't know. I love living on buses. I love having my friends and coworkers around all the time.
Yeah.
And then you get off the bus and you're somewhere interesting most of the time. Sometimes you're in Omaha. Some days are Detroit. But those are interesting in their own way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I honestly, you know, not a lot of people, I guess, have lived this experience, but I love a bus sleep.
It's so great.
Something about it. Yeah.
Oh, it's the best sleep you'll ever have.
I know. It's
quiet
really
engine noise.
Yes.
You're just moving around. It's so hard to describe why it's great, but I would sleep on a bus every day.
Yeah.
if they could replicate that in a real bed.
There's a business idea. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to make tens of dollars.
Yeah. It's going to be great. I want to ask you just general advice for aspiring lighting directors and operators who are just starting out in the industry.
Said it before, but I'll start there. Just make friends.
Yeah.
Shake every hand. Be pleasant every day, because you're going to see everybody again. There's just a lot fewer of us in this business than you ever think. And you're going to run into everyone you've seen once. You'll see them again.
Yes.
Be nice. And then don't be afraid to ask questions. I love not knowing things. I love getting to reach out to my friends that I think are brilliant and ask them a dumb question and let them explain it in a cool way. And like, I don't know, never stop learning stuff. Never be afraid not to know anything.
Yeah.
Do the best you can every single day. And I don't know.
Fantastic.
Keep trying. Keep going. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah. There you go. Are there some skills or experiences you think are crucial or, you know, important for someone looking to pursue a career in lighting?
You know, an eye detail is always helpful. I don't know if there's really a good path to ending up in this as in like a schooling way or anything, but
sure.
As I've said, everything can always be learned online. You can learn absolutely anything online.
Yeah,
the base of my MA3 knowledge comes from YouTube videos. And like you can learn anything. You want to know how to build a full show on MA3, you could learn it in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Crazy. No problem. All on your computer. No issues. Just keep learning stuff. Don't be afraid to say yes to things that you don't necessarily know how to do yet.
Yeah.
Because you can know how to do it pretty quick.
Yeah. Yes. You know? Yeah. Are there some resources other than YouTube that you'd sort of recommend for people who are looking to get into the visual world?
Get into lighting? Or general visuals. There's some great books. Learn a lot about color theory.
Yeah.
Learn a lot about the history of the business. I think it's very helpful to learn about the future of the business, but there's not a great way I found to learn about it other than going to talk to the old grumpy heads in the business. You know, tell me about your first couple of tours. Like the guys I first worked with toured with Tesla and Styx and this weird little country band called the Oak Ridge Boys. And like hearing about their old stories about hanging up 400 par cans in the day and they had to reach in there and get electrocuted. Like you just pick up all these little bits of knowledge and how you used to do it. And there's so much to learn about the way things used to be done. Yes. I think in this business, because it's not very well documented, because it's changed so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, make friends, be nice.
How do you stay inspired and continuously improve your skills in lighting?
All of my friends are better at this than me. It's frustrating. it's selfish, but I want to be a little bit better than them and they keep learning more and I'm always chasing their tail. Just last night spent the night with my brilliant designer programmer. His name is Tiberius Benson. He does all the lights for Soundtribe Sector 9. And the guy is a genius. His brain works quicker than everybody's. He's more passionate than you are. He will spend all night, every night, working on simple ideas until he has them nailed down. Absolutely.
Crazy.
And I'm never not impressed by the things he produces. And the amount of effort he's willing to put into every single project. I don't know. There's something very important about having impressive peers around you, people you think are better than you. Because in getting to kind of leech off of their excitement about your industry helps me be excited about the whole thing. You know, when they tell me some stuff that they think is really cool and I'm like, I don't understand anything you just said, that's really cool to me. Then getting to go and figure out how to catch up a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than Tiberius, are there some other people that you would recommend people just like sort of checking out their stuff?
People that are cool.
Full
recommend Tiberius Benson. There's a production group called Phantom Labs that is very cool. Core Design is always out there putting out the cool stuff. Very big. Claudio Petro is one of my favorite Instagram follows. It's very cool, very big size stuff. You got me on the spot. I want to look at my phone, but I don't. Let's think, Christopher Ruppel, Smalley is a genius and a madman. And then there's the big ones. Yeah. Go see Fish, go to the Sphere. They're very impressive.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
have you been to the Sphere yet?
I did. It's very cool. I liked it a lot. It's overwhelming in every perfect way.
Yeah.
It's so worth.
Who did you see there?
I didn't get to see an act. We got there the day after the U2 residency ended. So we went in and saw the Pebble Dot thing. There's a video, the movie they play in there. And even still, it's so hard to describe how overwhelming it is and how satisfying it is to not be able to see the edge of a screen.
Right.
And you're getting like a full head turn on either side of this content that exists behind you. It's overwhelming, but so lovely. I don't know how often I could do it, really, but it's so cool. Yeah.
Can I ask about some of your goals for the future, both personally and professionally as well?
yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I guess my goals are just to work with people I enjoy nowadays.
Yeah.
I feel like I've done the sizes of tours I want. I'm curious about. I don't need to go to stadiums, but I've done big arena tours, and that's fine. I can do that if that's what it needs to be.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care how big the show is if I don't like the people I'm working with. That's the only part that really matters to me. If I get paid, because at the end of the day, this is not for community service. It's a job. But if the money's good and I have friends around, I'm happy to be on a gig.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I don't know. The doing the big shows isn't, I didn't get the satisfaction I wanted out of any of that.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. It was just more shows.
Yeah. 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 Are there still some, you know, it's, if it's like a festival or a venue or a city that you're still like, I'd love to do that.
Okay. Like I would love to take my own headline show into MSG sometime.
Yeah, sure.
I was on the Anderson .Paak team when they went to MSG. The only time I've been to MSG, and it's incredible. It feels like such an accomplishment to even get into there.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like, I don't know. I want to play and do a full Japan tour.
Yes. Cause
like Asian tours are pretty rare.
Yeah.
And to get to do a big one of those would be very cool. Other than that, I've kind of been a lot of places, man.
No, that's great.
it's been a wild 4 or 5 years. You know, my first international tour was that Charlie tour.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And then I've never stopped. It was a wild opportunity. Like, hey, come to Europe. I'm finally going to Europe. Yeah. And now it's been every few months I'm back in Europe. So
yeah.
As soon as you get there, you just keep going.
Yeah. A good problem to have.
Yeah, it's cool. I got to spend a week in Italy this last year, last month.
Very nice.
Very cool.
Like on vacation?
No, it was on a tour, but
okay.
We had so many days off.
Yeah,
it was all right. Rome is incredible.
Yeah, Rome. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I haven't been yet. It's on the bucket list.
You'll get there.
Oh yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I believe you've done too much. Honestly, can I gush about you for a moment?
Sure.
I don't know if it'll make it in. It doesn't matter. I find you so impressive in your work ethic.
Thank you.
The way you're able to do all of these projects at once is so impressive. And you're still touring with a band right now, or soon, because I just
all over the place.
you never stop moving, and you guys are going to do so many things. I don't know. I'm excited to see where you guys end up.
Thank you.
I find you very impressive.
Thank you. It means a lot. It's been really great to chat with you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to end on a quick game, if you don't mind.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. for those who are listening, this is the Dream Fest game. We play a few games on the podcast. This is one of the, for me, probably the funner one. But you know, okay, maybe we want to edit that out, but
shade to the other games.
No shade to the other games. This is one of my favorite ones. It's basically giving our guests the chance to basically program or design their dream festival. So this week with Quincy Stanton, I'd love to talk to him about his dream festival, in regards to three acts that he'd love to be at this festival, where it would happen, as in a city or an area of the world, when, as in what time of year, the era / the, like which decade maybe, in the world, or in the timeline of the world rather.
Hmm.
There's a fun little question, a food and beverage served at this festival that would best represent you.
represents me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just like, okay, all right. Yeah. My headliner right now, Childish Gambino.
Yes.
I really like the new album. I think he's very exciting. The kind of rap music I really enjoy. Very thoughtful, very cool. Middle act. We're going, I don't know, a sunset set for Justice, but I think it'd be cool.
A
childhood love of mine. I love that band forever.
So cool.
And an opener, let's go Wolfpack.
Yeah,
sure. You know them? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a diverse festival. It's a weird day.
Honestly, but, really great.
Yeah. It'd be fun. I'd do it in Denver.
Yes.
all of this happens at Mission Ballroom, one of my favorite venues in the country.
Yeah.
And I just love this city so much. Any time of year we're indoors, it doesn't matter. There's nothing good about outdoor shows. Era is, it's going to be either early 2000s or right now.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure, sure, sure.
And food and beverage. I went to a festival that had an empanada stand.
Okay.
Is that little individual empanadas?
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That was dope. I love that stuff.
So sick. And is there a beverage that goes along with this empanada?
Oh man, empanada and a Moscow Mule is a messy day. Whoa. But it sounds great.
That is fantastic. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's a great festival. I'd actually go to this festival this weekend.
Yeah. Again, it's three different fan groups, but maybe they'd get along. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those like massive festivals. Which, by the way, still one of my favorite nights, probably days ever, is probably the Primavera Sound, a Barcelona day that we had in 2022, which I'm still raving about, and we've talked about this on the podcast many times before, but yeah.
Anyway, it was such a chaotic day too.
It was, yeah.
But like that show is unforgettable. It was really inspiring to see the kind of crowds that, I don't know, the audience response, the fact that we were able to pull a show off. Yep. We had people that were very sick at that show and like just like barely walking, but like the show was incredible. And it's, again, that confidence in your team to be able to help each other out really made that day be so successful, so wildly successful. That was a really cool show.
Yeah. Well, Q, that's how we wrap it up. Thank you so much for chatting today.
Oh yeah. Thanks, man. This is fun.
Today, we've had the absolute pleasure of diving into the world of lighting with one of the industry leading lighting directors and operators, Quincy Stanton. From exploring his journey in the industry as it is right now to discovering the complexities of his day to day, some challenges, and even talking to him about how how important the hang is, was quite important to the arc of the Cloud Machine podcast, just talking about that role and how important it is, but also his perspective on just the importance of the team and the confidence behind the team and how important everybody is to the process of live production. We look forward to seeing what he's got going on next, of course, with the Brat Tour and all of that that's happening in the course of the next year, especially with the Charlie and Troye Sivan tour going on towards the end of this year. To our listeners, you can connect with Q and stay updated on his latest projects and tours by following him on social media at Quincy Pop. That's QUINCYPOP. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and share, and leave a review. Also, don't forget to join our vibrant community on the 8s Network Discord. Whether you're a musician, an industry professional, a technician, somebody that's interested in lighting, maybe even a friend of Quincy's, don't forget to join the Discord. It's a perfect place to connect with like-minded individuals and stay connected on all things music industry. Visit the links in the episode description below to check it out and join. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe and see you next week.